This is Jim Inkster coming today on Talk Louisiana, a busy show. We'll start with LSU law professor Philip Hackney, who's slated to join us from Paris. He'll comment on his New York Times editorial, which was the lead editorial in the newspaper of record on Monday, calling for an IRS investigation criminally of President Donald John Trump. Also on the show, LSU professor Joseph Giami on the LIGO facility in Livingston Parish being recognized as a national physics site. This resulted in a Nobel Prize a year ago, and today is a big day in Livingston Parish. We'll hear from Philip Manuel and Bill Grimes on their performance at the LSU Music School on Thursday, and Tyler Bridges, advocate reporter, on what's happening with the special legislative session. Now the news on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757, and you can send an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. We begin with Philip Thomas Hackney. He is a professor of law at Louisiana State University. He will soon be leaving the Old War School to become a professor at the University of Pittsburgh School of Law. He is directing the LSU law program in France at the moment, and that is where he is as we talk. So I would imagine it's about 4:08 in the afternoon where you are, Philip Hackney, and good afternoon to you.
Yeah, thank you, Jim. And yes, it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It's kind of strange working into the U.S. system when you're abroad. But yeah, it's about 4 o'clock today and 9 o'clock over there. So you guys are just starting your day. Yeah, but it's a pleasure to be with you, Jim.
Well, Monday, I picked up a copy of my New York Times, and there the lead editorial is by Philip T. Hackney, who from 2006 to 2011 was an attorney for the chief counsel of the IRS, specializing in nonprofit organizations. And the headline in Philip Hackney's piece in the Times reads, "Why the IRS Should Go After Trump, as in the President of the United States, the leader of the free world, Donald J. Trump, and his foundation." Why do you believe this is perhaps a criminal case involving the president?
Yeah, so this was not a new position for me. Back during the election, I was very involved in watching over actually both candidates' foundations and reviewed the Trump Foundation and the Clinton Foundation. Early on, there were indications that the Trump Foundation had paid $25,000 to Pam Bondi's reelection campaign for Attorney General in Florida. And they stated on their form that all the money that they had spent had gone towards charitable activities. Now, this is not true, and there's taxes that are owed upon such thing. A private foundation owe 10% of that amount to the IRS. But Donald Trump signed a form stating that, in fact, that money went to good purposes and had paid the taxes. Well, when that came through, I said, you know, this is a problem. He needs to clean it up, needs to pay it. But it's not a criminal allegation. It's not a situation where criminal law should come in and apply. These are the types of things that are handled civilly. However, after David Farenthold and then some other reporters as well, did some significant work developing a series of years where the Trump family and President Trump, Mr. Trump in particular, used the foundation to acquire paintings of himself for himself, used the Trump Foundation to settle lawsuits for his own personal benefit. So he used money that is put away for public charitable purposes to benefit himself over and over again and represented over and over again to the IRS. In fact, these were for charity, not for himself. At that point, when you have a series of incidents over a period of time, that rises to the level where this is a pattern. And at that point, it's appropriate. Were I at the IRS, I would submit a referral for this to be investigated in a criminal sense. Because it is owed that kind of attention. And I said that back during the election, and I don't think anything's changed. If anything, his use during the 2016 campaign makes it worse. He used the campaign. The campaign used the foundation significantly to carry out campaign work, not foundation work. He used public charitable dollars to benefit himself personally. You can't do that.
Well, what options are available to the IRS in this particular case?
Sure. So the first and traditional way that you handle a private foundation that's behaving badly is to apply civil penalties. If they engage in what's referred to as self-dealing, buying a painting for yourself, then you can apply a penalty of 10% of the transaction. And you can also increase those penalties significantly if they don't correct it over a period of time. Once it's been noticed and they know about it, they can do that. There are additional things that can take place. They can charge a significant termination tax. They can take the exemption away from the private foundation, so they can put a pretty significant penalty on the private foundation itself and tax that significantly under a termination tax. There are a series of other excise taxes that they might apply on this, could owe significant money in that sense. But it also has the option of thinking about the criminal perspective, and it really doesn't use that often. It saves the criminal prosecutions and criminal investigations even for where you see a pattern of abuse. And it needs to have false statements that are intentionally made, knowingly made, understand the law. It becomes hard to bring these prosecutions. So they bring them only when they have a series of abuses over years. That would be another option.
David Fahrenholt, the reporter you mentioned, won a Pulitzer Prize for his reporting on this last year for the Washington Post. The president, in response to the revelations of the last week, says he's not shutting down the foundation and he's not settling. He doesn't believe he's done anything wrong. At least that's what the president is saying. So with the president drawing the proverbial line in the sand, is there a collision coming?
I think definitely with the New York Attorney General. This is Barbara Underwood. I think a lot of people thought regarding the former New York Attorney General, Eric Schneiderman, that he was kind of hot-dogging it, looking for an opportunity to make a political statement. I don't see that from Barbara Underwood. That's not her reputation. My guess is that she brought this with the attorneys in a very sober sense. And I would expect them to carry these out. It's an interesting aspect of charity law. There's a jurisdiction at the state level of the Attorney General, traditionally, mm-hmm. and a jurisdiction at the federal level, typically with the IRS. There can be a few other agencies that might get involved, but those are the two primary ones. At the state level, the Attorney General has the obligation, the duty, and the right to enforce laws against charitable organizations because there's no one else that can bring those claims for most practical purposes. They are using what's called their parens patria power to ensure that public dollars are used for public purposes. And so this lawsuit is in a strong, good tradition of ensuring public dollars are used in that way. And I think there will be a collision there. Whether there will be one with the IRS is an entirely different question I was raising.
Well, you started your op-ed piece by writing the New York State Attorney General filed a lawsuit against the Donald J. Trump Foundation and its directors, accusing the charity and the Trump family of violating campaign finance laws, self-dealing, and illegal coordination with the presidential campaign. It asked that Mr. Trump pay restitution and be prohibited from leading a nonprofit in New York for 10 years. There is so much swirling about the president, so much noise in the background. Is it possible that this particular probe will be lost in all the clutter that's going on?
Yeah, you know, I thought about that. There certainly is. On that day, I can't think of the number of news stories that were breaking that very same day. I think Manafort went to jail on the same day. The very next day, that the New York Attorney General seems to be the way that we're living our lives right now is that were drinking from a fire hose a series of amazing events, and it's really hard for our brains to keep up with them. From my perspective, I kind of keep a laser eye on nonprofit organizations, so I try and shine a light on those issues. And on this one, I think the New York Attorney General is spot on enforcing the law in this sense. I know plenty of people who run great nonprofits all over Louisiana, Baton Rouge. I work with Louisiana Association nonprofit organizations, and we train folks to run those operations correctly. We tell them to make sure that nobody's stealing from the foundation, nobody's using the foundation to benefit themselves. And it deeply offends me when I see somebody behaving in these ways, and that it is the President of the United States is even more disturbing. And I know that is the sense of those folks in the nonprofit community that run these organizations mm-hmm. regularly. So I hope there is a moment where we get an opportunity to have that conversation about what correct behavior should be exhibited around nonprofit organizations. If it's not done in that way, then you're going to see a drying up of a critical community that takes care of some of our most important functions in government. And so I think it's important to focus on this issue and that there be consequences.
There seems to be no argument that Donald Trump directed his foundation to acquire paintings of himself for himself, paid $258,000 to settle a couple of private lawsuits, and made political contributions. He made a $25,000 payment to the reelection campaign of Pam Bondi, the Republican Attorney General of Florida. And we'll spend a few more minutes with Philip Hackney, LSU Law Professor. Your number is 877-217-5757. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. A few more minutes with Philip Hackney, joining us from France, where he is teaching law students from LSU about the wonders of the legal profession. And soon, Dr. Hackney will be headed to the University of Pittsburgh, a big loss for the old war school. And I've known Philip Hackney since he was running Caliban's bookstore in the Perkins Road shopping center not so long ago. And certainly we wish you well in Pittsburgh, but we're sorry you're leaving the Bayou country for the Steel City, Dr. Hackney.
Yeah, it was a really tough decision. My heart and soul is here in Baton Rouge and at LSU. It was just quite an opportunity to join Pittsburgh. They had come looking for me, had asked me to apply, and it was quite the opportunity. One of the exciting things in the Pittsburgh community for me is they have a sort of what I refer to as a Disneyland of nonprofits. The robber barons all left a ton of money. The Carnegies and the Phipps and the Fripps have left a lot of money there. Well, so it's quite an exciting opportunity for me in that sense.
Well, good for you.
It's a tough time to leave.
Well, a listener, before we part company and let you get to your goings-on in France, asked, does anyone who's contributed to the Trump Foundation have standing to file a lawsuit, since there is evidence that, as you report in the New York Times, Mr. Trump paid over $250,000 to settle two lawsuits with funds from the foundation, made political contributions, and even bought an oil painting of himself. If I contributed to the Trump Foundation, can I file a lawsuit?
It's often really hard. Occasionally, beneficiaries have rights to bring lawsuits against nonprofits, but usually courts exclude them out. The way we work our system is the Attorney General is generally supposed to bring these operations. I'm not certain what beneficiary rights you have in New York, and that would be where the law would be situs there. But traditionally, you know, it's awful hard. It can be done in unique circumstances. It's odd with President Trump's foundation, the Donald J. Trump Foundation, because it's a private foundation, which is traditionally just contributed, say, by the family. And there wouldn't be anybody else to be able to come in. He used it in odd ways, which is to raise money in a public charity sense. But my guess is somebody trying to bring a lawsuit as a contributor would have an awful big hurdle to get over.
Well, thank you for joining us, Dr. Philip Hackney, and hopefully we'll talk soon, even if it's from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. But thanks for joining us.
I would love that very much. I appreciate you having me on today.
Good deal. And we're joined now by Dr. Joseph Giami, who's been a fixture and a treasure at LSU for many years. His degree, PhD, is from MIT, 1995, and he's been at LSU for many years. And this is a big day for Louisiana State University and for the Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory, LIGO, in Livingston, Louisiana. And good morning to you, Dr. Giami.
Good morning, Jim.
Good to talk.
I have a surprise for you.
Yes.
You're getting an upgrade. I have to go participate in a National Science Foundation review of us, and so we have here Professor Gabriela Gonzalez, who is the spokesperson. She's also an LSU professor, the spokesperson for the collaboration at the time of discovery, and Professor Ray Weiss from MIT, who's a recent Nobel Prize winner you might have heard of.
Oh yes, and he's been on this show, and what a character Dr. Ray Weiss is, who. Rainer Weiss still teaches at MIT, I believe.
So I have to run off, and you are in great hands. You and your listeners are in great hands.
Okay, well, thanks for handing it off to two distinguished guests. And I was impressed when this endeavor won the Nobel Prize last year. Dr. Gonzalez, there you were with all these scientists from places like MIT, and you had your LSU pin on.
I did, yes. That was at the time of the announcement, and I was with Ray there, and he thought, who later, the next year, that was last year, they won the Nobel Prize, so it was a great honor.
Well, the Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory today, and actually 11 o'clock this morning, will be designated a historic site by the American Physical Society, and this doesn't just happen anywhere, does it?
That's true. There are few of these buildings designated historical buildings. It is a campaign for showing how physics is done in lots of different places, including Louisiana and also in Hanford, Washington, our sister observatory.
Well, for those unfamiliar, the plaque reads, on September 14, 2015, LIGO interferometers at Livingston and Hanford made the first direct observation of a gravitational wave. The precision required to detect these tiny disturbances in space-time caused by merging black holes was made possible by the coordinated labor of over 1,000 scientific and technical workers. This and a companion plaque at the other LIGO site recognize their contribution to this historic detection. Dr. Weiss, you were with us in a memorable appearance a year ago. A Nobel laureate himself, Dr. Rainer Weiss, professor emeritus at MIT, you have noted that the people in Louisiana, in this facility in particular, they were largely responsible for this great scientific discovery.
Well, not only that, they saw it first. It came from the south. I don't know, we talked about that at the time. The gravitational waves hit Louisiana first, and then about 0.007 of a second later, it hit Hanford. So they were the first, okay? But much more important than that, I think, and I told you that in my other interview with you, that LSU has played a significant role in this field for many, many years, way before LIGO, as a matter of fact. They had a group of people working on gravitational wave research with another technique, and in fact, they were very, very, they were near the top edge of that technique. They were doing very good work here. But unfortunately, that technique wasn't sensitive enough, and we didn't know that. None of us really knew how strong the sources would be. But then, when this idea of doing laser interferometry was invented, the people at LSU in the physics department, and then convincing their administrators and going all the way up to the president of the university, convinced them that this would be, Louisiana would be a wonderful place to put one of those sites for this new technique. And thank God they did it, because it was, even in those days, in the early days of LIGO, it wasn't yet an accepted idea. And that's the thing I really, I know I'm going to start talking and you're going to interrupt me, but don't do it now, because I have one thing that's very important to say. The celebration here isn't just about the fact that we detected gravitational waves. There's another celebration going on simultaneously with it. and that's to celebrate the National Science Foundation and the people in the foundation who actually made all the difference in continuing on pushing this field. And let me tell you why that was so remarkable. Because here was a couple of flaky scientists like me proposing that we do something quite grand like this. But to be honest with you, we didn't have the technology in hand yet at the time. And the same thing, we weren't sure that there were really sources out there. We knew there had to be, but we didn't know how strong they would be. And nevertheless, the National Science Foundation, which was the big agency in the United States that supports curiosity-driven science, okay, and they made a decision to go ahead and put some money in the beginning and then a little more money and even more money, and by the time we got done, and we're not done yet, but up to now, we've spent a grand total of about $1 billion on this. And that's a lot of money, and a lot of taxpayers have, want to know what they got for it, and we're trying our best to tell them. And so the important thing is that the NSF saw this thing through, and it was a risky proposition for them, and they won the bet. And they ought to get a lot of credit for this.
Since 2015, LIGO has detected gravitational waves from three distinct black hole collisions and one collision of neutron stars. And we'll talk a few more minutes with Dr. Rainer Weiss from MIT, a Nobel laureate, and Dr. Gabriela Gonzalez, who is the front person from the LSU Department of Physics and Astronomy on this project, which has justifiably gained international acclaim. It doesn't get any better than the Nobel Prize, and that's what happened a year ago. And we'll talk with them about this distinction. And today, the Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory in Livingston will be designated a historic physics site by the American Physical Society. We're back after this pause for the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Ali Baltazar is producing. Your number is 877-217-5757. A few more minutes with Dr. Rainer Weiss, the Nobel laureate from MIT, where he is professor emeritus, and Dr. Gabriela Gonzalez, who is a professor at the LSU Physics and Astronomy Department. And she was the lead scientist at LSU, along with Dr. Giami and Dr. Weiss, in the great find a year ago, the Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory, on September 14th of 2015, that resulted in the Nobel Prize a year ago, made the first direct observation of gravitational waves. And this is something that is heady stuff, even for those who do not have a scientific background. This is about as good as it gets. And LSU's role in gravitational wave science began in 1970. 48 years ago, an astronomy professor, William Hamilton, and a professor, Warren Johnson, built and operated the first campus site that was specializing in this kind of thing. And LIGO, which is being recognized today by the American Physical Society, is a system of two identical detectors carefully constructed to detect incredibly tiny vibrations from passing gravitational waves. It was conceived and built by MIT and Caltech researchers, funded by the National Science Foundation, with significant contributions from other partners, including Louisiana State University. Dr. Rainer Weiss, you spend a lot of time here and much of your time in Massachusetts, where you are at MIT, and I am elated that you are giving much of the credit to your southern friends here in Louisiana. Could this project have been achieved without what happened right here where you are today?
Well, I'm going to say a little, but I want Gabi to tell you what they really discovered. But no, the project could not have been done without two detectives. And the fact is, thank God, one of them was in Louisiana, because it's the intellectual environment, because of LSU, made it a very attractive place to put that site. And and I want Gabi to explain to you what we actually discovered, because that's something more interesting than the history.
Gabi, Professor Gonzalez?
Yes. Yes, I'm called Gabi, and I like that. Yes, we've made the celebration and the plaque was for that first discovery of gravitational waves that were produced. These are ripples in space-time that Einstein's theory predicted and were produced by the merger of two big black holes more than a billion years ago. But the big thing is that, and we said it at the time, is that that was the start, that was just the beginning of a new field to do astronomy, to learn about black holes. And we have now discovered five more signals coming from other systems of black holes that were merging at different times, at different distances. And we are learning a lot from that. But last year, and this your listeners may not have learned because it was not in the front page of the newspapers, it was in the front page of the scientific journals, we discovered a signal, again, not just in the two LIGO detectors, but also in a European detector. And this signal was coming not from black holes, but from neutron stars that merged and formed the black hole. So
all right, so even more significant findings are taking place as we speak, and as noted at 11 o'clock today, this ceremony will be taking place where the LIGO facility in Livingston is designated a historic physics site by the American Physical Society. No, Phil in Jefferson Terrace has been holding, and we'd like to get you on before we part company with Dr. Weiss and Dr. Gonzalez. Phil, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Jim, and just how with what pride and appreciation to have this happening, and especially here. Could you tell us, like, in terms of, I mean, is this like a breakthrough you would compare to the theory of relativity being proved? I mean, is this going to help us find out how to make anti-gravity rocket engines? I know it's a lot more important than who won the Super Bowl.
All right. What about the significance of this, Dr. Weiss?
Well, it's a nice question. Thank you for the question. What it does is two things it did. First of all, it did show that the things that Einstein did sitting at a desk, somewhere in Berlin and probably in Prague, when he was inventing the idea of this new way of thinking about gravity, that the ideas that he had, which were really brand new and quite different, actually do bear out reality in nature. In other words, nature behaves the way Einstein's equations say they ought to, which is quite a triumph. Doing it all in your head. To me, that is, sure, things were known about gravity by Newton and beforehand, but this is quite a radical new idea. And the thing is that gravitational waves should exist and that black holes should exist are all due to Einstein's theory, not to Newton. So this is an enormous verification of a thought process, which then turned into reality. And it's a charming idea. Now, the thing that I think really is important, and Gabi alluded to this, was that it has opened a new field for all of us. In other words, we now can look at the universe in a completely different way, a way that probably will tell us things we have never even thought about. It'll tell us a lot about things we know about in a new way, but also will tell us a lot about things we hope we have never even thought about. And that's what happened over and over again when a new tool is opened up in astronomy and astrophysics. And that's the real new thing that's going to happen. Every kid in the world is going to learn something new. Maybe their time, maybe their warps in space. Maybe there are places where there are wormholes that go to another place. We just don't know what we're going to see. And it'll make very exciting news for everybody who cares about what nature is about.
Well, thank you, Dr. Weiss, and thank you, Dr. Gonzalez, and congratulations. And mostly thanks not only for what you've done for the world at large, but for our world here in Baton Rouge. This is heady stuff for Louisiana State University. Take care, and we'll talk soon. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Jim.
Yeah, thank you, Jim. Yeah.
My pleasure. We're joined now by a couple of gentlemen who will be on stage tomorrow night at the LSU Music School. They've done this many times over the last many years, hot summer nights, cool jazz. Vocalist Philip Manuel, one of the most spectacular singers in the world from New Orleans. He'll be coming up to Baton Rouge. And also on stage will be his partner in crime, Bill Grimes, the fabulous bass player who's played with some of the great luminaries of the world and retired as a professor at LSU after 34 years last month. And Bill Grimes, let's begin with you this time. This is a big event for you.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks for the call. Yeah, every performance is a big deal. I always want to try to do my best. And performing with what we call the A-team, you know, between Willis Taloney, Troy Davis, Brian Shaw, and Philip Manuel, and our new colleague, Doug Stone, it's really the A-team.
Yes, indeed. And Philip Manuel, as I mentioned, is as good as any vocalist in the world, and he will be on stage as the front man tomorrow night, LSU Music School. And you've done this for a couple of decades, Philip, and it is always a high point for this community, and I presume for you to be on stage at the music school.
It is absolutely. It's one of the few places, Jim, where I feel like a rock star. I love this concert. I absolutely love this concert. I love the folks in Baton Rouge. They are as loyal could be. And just it's just one of my favorite concerts all year. There's a few that I do every year that are big favorites, and this is certainly one of them.
Well, tomorrow night, 7:30, it'll be Bill Grimes, and as he mentioned, Brian Shaw, Willis Taloney, Doug Stone, and Philip Manuel. And for those who have not heard Philip, tomorrow at 7:30, this is a sampling of this exceptional singer and his work that I'm sure will be on full display in full bloom Thursday evening.
About your love, it's like the place where the angels meet. They call it heaven, a place where wonders never cease. And all your kisses, it could be said that they changed my life. What magic this is, without the tricks of hands that slide. You take my breath away, I don't mind, yeah. You stole my kisses first, then you swept my heart away. You take my breath away, but who needs breathing anyway? A crazy thing to say, but
all right. Pretty good stuff, and Philip.
I sure like that song.
Yeah, well, you do it well, and that's
I
the one
like that
connected
I
to you.
I have to thank Michael Pallera for that song. He wrote the melody, and it just absolutely inspired those lyrics. And, I mean, once I heard the melody, it was all on. I love that song. Thanks for playing that.
All right, and you and Bill have been performing together for, at least 25 years, haven't you?
At least. Bill, at least, huh?
At least 25 years, Bill Grimes.
And I came in 84, and Philip and I started working together at Geno's, maybe in 88.
Right.
30 years. Yeah.
It's 30 years. It's got to be, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I'll tell you, when Philip walks into the stage, or walks onto the stage, or sometimes before the show, we'll go down the street to get some coffee, and when Philip walks into the coffee shop, he owns that room, too. He has a presence about him vocally and personally that he just owns the room.
And we'll talk more with Bill Grimes and Philip Manuel after we return, and then we'll hear from Tyler Bridges of The Advocate on The Session right here on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Engster, and thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Ali Baltazar is producing, and we're going to hear from Tyler Bridges, the Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter for The Advocate, on what's going on at The Session. But we're finishing up with Bill Grimes and Philip Manuel, who'll be on stage tomorrow night. Once again, it's hot summer nights, cool jazz time, and it'll be Bill Grimes, Brian Shaw, Willis Taloney, and Doug Stone with Philip Manuel, who'll be singing his heart out. Pardon
Don't
me?
Troy Davis.
And Troy Davis as well. Troy Davis, who is magnificent. Yeah. Yes, 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 yes. Well, Bill Grimes is actually about to perform at a funeral, but so he
I got time.
He hasn't given up his performing, but You retired after 34 years. That had to be quite a decision for you.
It was a very easy decision to make for the following reasons. What I have gained in experience over 34 years, I've lost in energy. And every time a senior professor keeps working when they no longer feel they're effective, they're keeping a young hotshot like Doug Stone from having a college teaching position. So my wife and I want to travel. We want to have fun. And so it was the right time. It was really a very easy decision. I felt it was
it was
the right thing to do. I'm not retiring from music.
Well, Philip, I know that you have great admiration for Bill, who's been with you.
Yeah, that's a great thought, Bill. I never thought of anybody retiring the reasons, but that is a great thought in your retirement. I mean, give one of these guys a shot. You've learned a lot and you've given a lot. That's beautiful. I love it.
Well, tomorrow night, 7:30, LSU School of Music. And if you'd like more information, you can call 578-3527. That's 225-578-3527. Thank you, Professor Grimes, and thank you, Philip Manuel, and we'll see you soon.
And thank you.
See you tomorrow night.
Take care.
All right, man.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And we're joined now by Tyler Bridges, the intrepid reporter for the Baton Rouge Advocate. For many years, he was with the Times-Picayune of New Orleans and the Miami Herald, where he won a Pulitzer Prize, and he is covering the legislature with Ernest, and there's a seventh special session in 29 months ongoing. And Tyler Bridges, the headline in The Advocate, House committees hold hearings but no votes, a fine story from Elizabeth Crisp, but it appears that things are still in flux. And today at 2 o'clock, by the way, Governor John Bel Edwards will be hosting his monthly radio show right here on WRKF. But how do you see this evolving with the June 27th deadline to finish now 1 week away?
Good morning, Jim. I don't think anybody knows how this is exactly going to turn out. I think we can just sort of view it step by step. The next step, two key meetings today, both in the House, the Appropriations Committee is going to looks like they're trying to reopen a budget that the legislature already approved, which is controversial, but this is coming at the insistence of the conservative chairman of the Appropriations Committee, Cameron Henry of Metairie. Meanwhile, the House Ways and Means Committee is meeting at 11, and I think that's ultimately the more important meeting, and they're going to take up the various tax bills, sales tax bills, that Governor Edwards has authorized.
Well, some are of belief. Ted James said it at the press club Monday that this is an effort to stymie Governor Edwards, that there is an election that is now just 15 and a half months away, and that lawmakers, particularly those at the Capitol, have one eye on what's going on in the halls of the Capitol and another on what's going to happen in October of next year. Is there a concerted effort by some, a distinct minority, but still enough that could make a difference to keep Governor Edwards from claiming success?
Well, that is the argument, certainly, that the governor and many people, even Republicans, are making, and some Republicans in the House have even said it, that Republicans, the conservative Republicans in the House, are trying to gum up things for the governor and that to undermine his chances for reelection next year. I think the thing to focus on today is what's going to happen in the Ways and Means Committee. As I mentioned, Paula Davis, the state representative from Baton Rouge, is sponsoring what appears to be the Republican conservative sales tax plan. It would renew 4/10 of the expiring penny, the penny that was approved back in 2016. That expires on June 30th, and the Republican plan by Representative Davis would renew 4/10 of that. Interesting, because Representative Davis voted against a plan to renew half of a penny or even a smaller amount of a third of a penny on the final day of that last special session. But now she's seems to have changed her mind. And meanwhile, some Democrats are proposing to renew the half penny that the House almost approved on that final day of the special session, and it's the plan that the governor supports. the key move, I think, is to see whether the committee, which is the Ways and Means Committee, which is very conservative, first of all, whether they will let out anything. And I think they probably will, because they let out a 1/3 cent sales tax last time, and this time the 0.4% renewal proposed by Representative Davis has the support of Speaker Barra. But then, well, the committee also let out a Democratic proposed plan that would renew half the penny. I think those are the key developments we should be looking at today.
Well, what is the difference as far as potential cuts between 2/5 of a penny being renewed and 1/2 being renewed?
Yeah, Julia Donahue from the Times-Picayune tweeted out this morning that the House, the Legislative Fiscal Office is put on what's called a fiscal note to determine the amount of money that Representative Davis's bill would raise, so something like $427 million a year versus that's the 0.4% renewal versus the 0.5% renewal would raise $507 million and would not cause any of the cuts that Governor Edwards says would be bad. So we're talking about a difference of $80 million in terms of the consumer. We're talking about a difference of about $20 to $30 a year, or if you went to and bought $100 worth of goods subject to the sales tax, the difference is 10 cents on that $100 purchase. So the difference is very, very small at this point. Ted James, an African-American member from Baton Rouge, said yesterday that the members of the Black Caucus would not go below 4.5%. It's hard to imagine passing a sales tax renewal of any rate, whether it's 0.4 or 0.5, without the Black Caucus supporting it, just given the numbers, because you need 70 votes in the 105-member House. It's a 2/3 mm-hmm. threshold, because you also have a group of about 20 very conservative Republicans that will not vote for any sales tax renewal. So someone's going to have to bend, or both sides are going to have to bend. You could see, Jim, an ultimate proposal where you're somewhere between 0.4 and 0.5, which would mean some budget cuts, but that would seem to solve the solution. And whether the House can ultimately get to that point is not yet clear.
Henry at the Country Club of Louisiana. Good morning, Henry. You're on the air with Tyler Bridges.
Well, good morning, Mr. Jim. Good morning, Mr. Tyler. I hope you all having a great day. I got to disclose this now, Mr. Jim. You know, in all fairness, I've bought all three of Mr. Tyler's books, and he writes another one. I'll buy it, too, because I think he's a good writer, and I think he's accurate. I'm kind of concerned. I see that Representative Abramson got kind of upset and wrote a 3- or 4-paragraph dissertation about how bad Mr. Tyler was just because Mr. Tyler wrote that he was missing in action. Of course, he never denied that he was missing in action. He just told us how important he was, and he didn't have time to do what the people elected him to do. I was wondering if Mr. Tyler has been accused of any inaccuracy in that.
All right. What about Neil Abramson, who apparently took offense at something you wrote?
Yeah, I've written a couple of articles about Representative Abramson, one from a big profile of him 2 years ago, and then the more recent one was about who would miss the most abortion votes, according to the conservative Louisiana Right to Life, and it turned out that 7 Democrats in the legislature had missed the most votes, more than half over the last 3 years, and one of them was Representative Abramson, who has a history of missing abortion votes, and he did attack me on Facebook. He did not question specifically the facts of my story, which are pretty clear, based again on Louisiana Right to Life showing the number of votes that he had missed. And Representative Abramson, as Henry, I'm sure, knows, will play an important role today as the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee. He missed yesterday's hearing, but I'm expecting he would be there today. The chairman usually does not vote unless to break a tie, so we don't know where he exactly stands on the issues, but Representative Abramson has generally not sided with the governor, even though he is a Democrat from New Orleans.
And you'll have a chance to exchange pleasantries with him if you so choose.
Always happy to say hello.
Yes, and does he return the greeting?
Sometimes.
Sometimes. We're short on time, but how do you react to lawmakers when they take offense to you?
You know, my job is to put out information, the best and most accurate information I can put out there. I don't take offense unless someone is going to get personal with me, and that rarely happens. you know, we live in a democracy of different people have different ideas, and that's fine, and I should understand that not everyone's going to like what I write.
Well, we'll talk again with Tyler Friday on this show from New Orleans. So, Tyler Bridges, thank you for joining us. See you in a few days.
Thank you, Jim.
And we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place, and at 2 o'clock today with Governor John Bel Edwards. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.